sitting across from me here in the studio, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Mike Flanagan, here to talk about all things educational. Superintendent, thanks for joining us.
Happy to join you, Rick. And, you know, I see why you don't do TV. You can wear your pajamas here.
Huh? and you brought your bunny slippers. But you are the longest serving superintendent in Michigan history. When you retire next July, you will have been around a full decade, correct?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
And aged two decades in that.
Let's talk about the current controversy of charter schools that following a Detroit Free Press series that seemed to show some gaps in the system. You said that you were going to use your authority to hold charter school authorizers, not the operators, but the universities and others that give them permission to operate, that you are going to hold them accountable for the performance of those schools. You had a meeting just yesterday with the charter school authorizers. I believe it was to talk about the academics component of that. What was the upshot of that meeting?
Well, yeah, Rick, first of all, I saw Luana Simon recently, and she kind of smirked and said,
Michigan State University president.
Yes, and she kind of smirked and said she's glad they're not doing any charters. Yesterday's meeting, I would like to say this first of all. I met with the council, the so-called Council of Authorizers, which only represents about half of them, by the way, in February, because they do represent a good chunk of the schools that are chartered. And I wanted to clarify that because it's not – the Free Press did a good job, but we had this started in February, and I started talking to them about how I would use this authority. And the authority is actually quite limited. It just says if you're suspended, you can't add any new schools. I was kind of taken back that by even putting them at risk, all hell broke loose from their point of view. I was really surprised. We have kids at risk. We have schools at risk. I mean, it's part of our nomenclature. And if anything, that was giving them some fair warning that get your act together before we consider suspending you altogether.
Well, that's kind of the complaint from the charter authorizers, which is that, yeah, you put them on notice, you got everyone's attention, but what standards are actually going to be used to measure them?
Well, the for instance, a lot of them are at risk because they're not even complying with the law. So it gave them a chance to say, if your budget isn't put online and the law requires that, that's like the minimum transparency I can think of, right? So you're giving them a chance to say, we don't want to just gotcha, just get your act together and do that. And then I also wanted time to be thoughtful with them, as you referred to. We did yesterday. We met with them on academics, on a measure. I have to tell you, honestly, I was taken back by a few of them that came in. From my perspective, they came in already prepared to be obstructionists. And right away, that's not our job. Well, it's not our job to do academics, blah, blah, blah. Most of them got that, by the way, and thought it is our job. I'm the state superintendent. My main job is student achievement. So from my limited authority, the most important thing to me would be the academic results. So, I mean, but I also would say this. What I wanted
to
be
typically academics is written into the contract.
Well, but not in a way that – let me give you a perfect example. So you've got, let's say, 30,000 kids in your portfolio. And what we didn't want to do, what I didn't want to do, why we met with them was let's give you credit for improvement. Let's come up with a metric where you – so you might have a very low-performing portfolio. And in fairness, one reason you may have that is you're taking on some heavy lifts. You're going into neighborhoods that have, frankly, failed our kids for a long time. And many of the charters, I give them credit for going in and saying, we're going to take that. Well, I don't want to disincent them from doing that. So we said, as long as you're getting improvement, let's figure out what an improvement factor is. But there's some, perhaps, when we finalize this metric, we may find they not only have a low-performing bottom 5% portfolio of all the districts, mm-hmm. of all the schools, but it's actually getting
worse.
That's
because they're being measured according to rankings.
Yes.
Which is also one of the complaints that you could have a lot of people, you know, again, going into, you know, places that are hard to serve, or maybe, you know, they're showing a lot of improvement, but that they could still fall low on the rankings when they're doing the job.
Right. And 20 years from now, if and when everyone's doing pretty well, that would be unfair to have a relative ranking. But right now, trust me, the bottom 5% is the bottom 5%. The bottom 10% is not doing well at all. But I want to give them credit for going in. So as long as you're improving that portfolio, you'll be fine. But if you're taking on schools and over 2-3 years they're getting worse, why would we say, oh, just keep authorizing more? And I'll tell you what really got me going last February was, I think it was Central, to their credit, closed 2 schools for not performing. And then another authorizer picked them up. I mean, it's my job as state superintendent to say that doesn't make sense. That's not appropriate. I mean, you've even got one of your own that's saying they weren't worthy, and then the next one picks them up.
But how would suspending an authorizer's ability to charter new schools fix that particular situation?
This school, which I think it probably shouldn't mention because I'm not 100% sure which school it is, but they wouldn't have been able to add new charter schools had they been suspended. So, I mean, what got my attention was I could
have actually— But CMU is the one that issued the charter for the bad schools. They closed them down.
And the one that picked them up wouldn't have been able to pick them up.
Because they've got too many poor-performing schools.
Because they would have been suspended. Had they been suspended—
Under the criteria that you're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. So, I mean, all I'm getting at is that's what spurred my interest more than anything. And then, frankly, some of the authorizers themselves said to me, geez, we hope you'll consider using your authority because this whole system could come down if we don't straighten out our weakest links. So that one really got my attention about, you know, one of your own's even saying they're not worthy, and then another one picks them up.
One of the complaints within at least some elements of the charter community is they feel like everyone isn't treated the same. That one set of authorizers, the public universities, are treated one way. That there's a different set of criteria that seems to be used for ISDs, which can authorize schools. Typically don't, but there are a few cases where that happens. And then they say that, you know, you're going after, in these rankings, you're going after charter academies, but public schools, traditional public schools, aren't held to the same standards.
Well, let's think about that. First of all, on our at-risk list are ISDs and universities and the EAA and Detroit Public Schools.
The Educational Achievement Authority.
Yeah. So, I mean, this idea that somehow we're targeting universities, it doesn't even make sense when you look at the list of 11. And that worked itself out. I mean, it's not like we were trying to get one from each category.
The list of 11.
The list of 11 at-risk authorizers include those I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But we're going to work on an improvement factor, and we got a lot of input yesterday. We're going to meet later this afternoon. I think we maybe have that down pat. We're going to take, they made a couple of great suggestions that we'll incorporate into our metric, and then we'll go from there so that they get credit for improvement. But if you're taking on low-performing schools, which we thank you for, but they're getting worse over time, I should at least say don't add any more until you get your act together. I'd like to think we'll see when the numbers play themselves out. But with these factors for improvement, the odds are of the 11, some of them would come off that list and not be suspended. And again, suspended means you can't add any until you get off that list.
But you still get to. That is State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Mike Flanagan, here on Current State on WKAR. I'm Rick Pluta, sitting in for Mark Bayshore. So when we get to this point where you're going to hold authorizers accountable, I guess two questions. The first one is, what in the big picture will those standards look like? And then two, when might we see something?
Well, I think some of the standards will look like what the authorizers are even proposing, at least the Council of Authorizers. Again, I've got a problem because they're not all part of the council, but they've got some good thoughts about accreditation, which we would incorporate.
But doesn't that suggest that when they talk about different types of authorizers and different types of charters being held to different standards, that they have
standard.
A point?
This will be all one standard. That's why I think it's my job to unify that, not have the ones that belong to the council operate one way and ISDs operate another way. Under this system, it'll be a uniform system. It'll be the same system for everyone, no matter where they, whether it's the EAA, an ISD, a local district, or a university. That's the whole point. So I think we can incorporate some of their thinking about accreditation into that. But the most important factor to me, that I could tell two of them yesterday, my view were playing obstructionist on this, is that they don't want us to touch academics at all. Well, I'm the state superintendent. Of course we're going to look at academics. And if anything, we're going above and beyond to say as long as you're improving, we're okay. But you need to be improving.
Do we need, let's talk a little bit about other at-risk schools. You know, every quarter of the year that the department publishes a list of school districts that are showing signs of fiscal stress. What are What have you discerned from that list over time? What are the common characteristics of schools that are financially in trouble?
Enrollment instability is the number one. And I think also, frankly, I'm pushing and asking for a lot more at-risk funding. I think that's a way to target the schools, the Flints, the Detroits, even some poor rural districts that are, they have heavier lifts. You've got kids, including, by the way, more at-risk money would go to a lot of the actual charter schools that are in these very neighborhoods we're talking about that I appreciate them going in. So this is why our work with the charter authorizers has nothing to do with charter schools. The charter schools are held to the same standard as traditional schools with our top-to-bottom list, with all those other things. I thought it was interesting that, you know, one even said yesterday that, you know, higher ed isn't to be controlled by anyone.
One of the charter authorizers.
Yeah. But in this count—
Were they talking about the constitutional provision, the autonomy in the state constitution
and
for universities?
That, but for example, I took away with my authority— State Board supported this, was that some of them weren't doing the job they should have been doing on teacher preparation. So we, in effect, suspended their ability to do teacher preparation for a while, a few years ago. So we have limited authority in a few areas, and it's not overtaking anything the trustees do.
You're saying the teacher preparation would be another example of where the state stepped in and did something vis-a-vis a public university, regardless of what the state constitution says about their autonomy.
And it gives me the authority to do that. So, for example, I was happy to sign a letter last week for Lake Superior State that we took away that ability for some of their teacher prep. They had a 5-year window. They got it up to speed quicker. So I didn't wait the 5 years. After 2 years, we're giving them back their ability to do teacher preparation because they got on it, they did a great job, and congratulations. So this could be the same way. But I think there's a certain, I would say this also, it's not to be mixed up. The State Board, I think, is doing a good job on trying to look at quality factors related to charter schools themselves. That's a whole different issue that they and some of the legislature is looking at. Mine is really limited. It's authorizers, and it's can you continue to authorize new schools if you don't meet certain standards.
When you talk about quality, are you talking about things other than academics?
Well, I think that the State Board and other legislators are looking at other factors. But to be clear, on the stuff I'm looking at right now, it would be largely what the council itself is talking about with accreditation. But in addition, what I think is the way we need to look at academics. They have a place in there for academics, but it's for them to determine what those rules are. I need to step in that case and say what we think is the appropriate metric for improvement of your portfolio.
When might we see a decision on what to do about authorizers in trouble? Decisions.
Before the first of the year.
Before the first of the year? Although these meetings, I guess, are supposed to go on till March?
Well, we're going to debrief today. I don't know if we maybe got enough already that we can move on. I need to talk to the rest of the team. I came over here and spoke at Kellogg, so I didn't make the end of the meeting yesterday.
But we have just a couple of minutes left, but quickly, in terms of school districts in financial trouble and the state's ability to intervene early, what we're calling an early warning system, does it need to be easier, at least in the short term, for the state to become involved early and send in to do something that would lead essentially to emergency management for school districts in trouble?
It does need to be earlier. I certainly support the idea that the FIT teams that they're funding to get in earlier. I think the legislation needs some work yet because I would agree with Senator Kahn, who's asked us for some
Senator
advice.
Roger Kahn, the Senate Appropriations Committee chair.
Yes, and some other senators, by the way. But he happened to be the one that I ran into and asked for our specific advice. And we just think that the way it's written right now, it's a couple of hundred schools that we'd school districts that we'd be looking at. And that's too wide a scope. We need to focus in earlier, but maybe on 50 or so, not 200 and some. So, and then you can get ahead of the curve. But I'll tell you this, as I said earlier to your question, Rick, that if enrollment instability is an issue. Mm-hmm. And you can argue why that's happening in certain places. But when I was a local superintendent 20 years ago, we had 15,000 kids. But if you lost 100 kids and you didn't know it until after school started, you really can't remove or lay off 100 kids worth of teachers, so you just lose the foundation money.
You know, quickly, you know, last year we were surprised by Inkster and Buena Vista school districts that had to close early because they ran out of the money. Looking ahead and trying to figure out what the problems are, what's the surprise in the making that we should be thinking about?
Well, I think that the good thinking that's gone on, and I'm not often complimenting the legislature, especially with some of the testing stuff last year, but I think to their credit, to the governor's credit, to the state board's credit, they're trying to get ahead of this and not have suddenly these drastic solutions, which are dissolution of districts. That was heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. I mean, and at the time, Treasurer Dillon and I were, under the law, required to have a hearing, but had no authority other than to dissolve the district. So the hearing was somewhat perfunctory and very, very painful to watch people who, from their point of view, it's here you go again. You know, the people in Lansing are coming in and taking us over. Something had to happen because they weren't going to be able to open their doors for their kids. But this is why the whole thing about trying to get ahead of this makes sense. And then I think if that happens and we get good legislation, you won't see the dissolutions happen again.
Okay, and that could be a whole separate conversation, maybe come back again to talk about it. That's State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Mike Flanagan. You are listening to Current State on WKAR. I'm Rick Pluta.